Ready to go? All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. I want to say thank you very much for coming today and attending the session and not standing in line to get your Surface. We really appreciate it. Who actually already has their Surface? Oh, that's a good name.
Excellent.
That explains.
This is good.
That explains this.
Good. Before we more than an hour and a half?
Yeah.
Only a few. That's good.
Okay. So before we start, we want to get an understanding of actually who is in the room. Okay, so if you have the word architect in your title or in your job description, can you please raise your hand? That's a good number. What about systems admin? Okay, that's a good bulk. Support staff? Help desk? A few? Okay. Any business decision makers, like CIOs, CFOs, we've got a few. Technical decision makers, like SVPs of infrastructure. Okay, good. Yeah, that's a good cross-section, I think, of resources that we really want to speak and cater to. So my name is Jamal Malik. I am a business solutions architect with Microsoft's Data Center and Private Cloud Center of Excellence.
And my name is Philip Moss, and as you can hear, I'm English, and I am CEO of NTTX, who are a UK-based service provider specializing in public cloud and private cloud solutions for the enterprise and the mid-market sector.
Now, everybody knows that the way to instant credibility is to do one of two things, or hopefully two things, and that is to get somebody who doesn't work for your company to support or validate the messages that you're trying to relay. And number two, have a British accent. We've done both. So hopefully this session that we're going to deliver to you guys is something that you feel is relevant and something you can take home, hopefully immediately, and apply in your own environment. Okay? The goal or the subject of this session is going to be around understanding what the next generation of data centers is going to look like. But more importantly, sharing with you not only Microsoft's experiences in running some of the largest data centers in the world, but also service providers, real service providers, that actually make their living off of delivering services to their consumers in a fashion that they can monetize. Okay? So, I also want to give you and just share a little bit of background around what actually got me to where I am. So I'd like to tell a very, very quick story, okay? In March of 2003, the U.S. invaded Baghdad. In June of 2003, I was there as a civilian setting up data centers for the United States Department of Defense. For the next 4 years, I traveled across Iraq, Afghanistan, Kuwait, Qatar, Uzbekistan, Doha, basically every single hot zone America's been in for the last 10 years setting up data centers. I joined Microsoft in 2008 as an IT architecture and planning consultant, working with large organizations, helping them with long-term IT strategy and planning. Okay? I love the data center business. Love it. It bothers my wife how much I love data centers. I could talk about it all day. And today, in my role, I have the incredible opportunity to attend events like this and share not only what Microsoft experiences are, but my own experiences have been in running these data centers and also our service providers. So what I want to do really quickly is I'm going to switch to a video. And this video is going to introduce to you how Microsoft runs some of its own data centers, okay? So when you think about Microsoft, you think of what? Windows, Office, Xbox, maybe, right? You don't typically associate it with data centers. But the fact of the matter is, Microsoft has been running data centers since 1989. What you're looking at here is actually the latest generation of data centers, more commonly referred to as an IT pack. Okay? An IT pack consists of skinless servers. A skinless server is essentially a motherboard with CPU, storage, networking, and RAM soldered directly onto the board. Okay? It contains no redundant parts whatsoever. Okay? What this allows us to do is essentially take a perimeter, as you see on the screen here, literally an empty parking lot, pump networking and power into this space, and literally bring up data centers and add capacity to our grid of data centers in the world through what we call CDNs, or content distribution nodes. This process, which typically takes some organization months, if not years, takes us weeks. It's incredible. On top of that, you'll notice that this house has no roof. Even though it doesn't have a roof, we're still able to comply to some of the most highly sophisticated regulations in the world. NIST 800-53 for the government folks, FISMA, and a host of others. We do this through an incredible amount of effort put into re-engineering our processes, our governance, and control of data centers. Okay? So, us having this grid of capacity, we actually run many of the services that you know today, Azure, Bing, Hotmail. Many of those services are actually free. So whatever we can do to drive down the cost of running those services, but still delivering it with a high level of availability and redundancy to our customers is top of mind. What you're looking at here is one of our Dublin data centers, or one of our mega data centers in Dublin, Ireland. Okay? What we're able to do with this design is run data centers at a PUE of 1.2. That is by far the best and industry-leading numbers in the world. That beats Facebook, Google, Yahoo, Amazon, you name it. We're able to achieve this with our innovative design around the IT packs, essentially not requiring a lot of facilities to run and operate these services. Okay? Now, switch back to our PowerPoint here. A couple of things that I want to share with you that goes into the thought process of delivering, designing, and architecting these services at scale. And it's actually very simple. It falls on four principles. The first, and I would say probably the most important, is the approach of extreme standardization, both at the hardware layer, at the service layer, and also at the software layer. The next piece is actually focusing on architecting workloads that are resilient at the application layer. So not relying on infrastructure, which is expensive, decays over time, and is difficult to update and maintain. Not having a dependency on hard infrastructure to provide high levels of service availability. Now, this is a piece that I want to take a second and really drive home. A lot of vendors, Microsoft included, will try to sell you something to say, this is what you need to build a private cloud solution. But I'll tell you, in my own experiences, the number one thing that makes or breaks an efficient data center is process maturity. Is process maturity. So rethinking the way you approach change management, service delivery, is absolutely paramount. In addition to that, and this is coupled with the notion of self-service, is driving out human involvement as much as possible and allowing your users to work through some form of service catalog to request whatever services they require. and deploy them as needed.
Okay, so let's pick up some of these themes now. So as a service provider, these are some of the areas we concentrate on all the time. For me, I have to deliver working end-to-end services to my customer base. Now, what that means for me is I always think about the application stack. I always think about the application delivery experience and the hardware layer, the automation layer. That is a slave to the application delivery experience. I don't think about terms of storage, compute, hypervisor. I think about working solutions to my user base, a working mailbox, a working SharePoint site, a working iPad that can pick up its email. These are things that are important to me. And what's really different about a service provider is I only care about two things. All I care about is providing services that meet my users' needs and reducing my operational costs. Well, why do I care about that? Because what I want to do is ultimately make money. IT is my business. You know, if I don't, I can see some smiles out here, so some people appreciate this. You know, if I don't make money, my children don't get fed. You know, this is my business. But what's really interesting about this is, you know, for the enterprise space, historically, the enterprise space has been about a cost center to the business. You had an operational cost you had to work within. And in fact, nowadays, the enterprise space now needs to think more about the service provider, work in the model of delivering value, work in the model of reducing operational costs. You deliver end-to-end services, not a data center fabric, a working experience to the end user. And there's one other thing I think I should talk about at this point. There's this wonderful section here, which is the automation layer. I was giving a presentation yesterday about future generation data center design. And someone asked me, how many ops staff do we have? And what they meant was, how many people do I have who go and manually use UIs, edit servers? My answer to that was zero, absolutely zero. I have no one in my entire organization who physically goes onto servers. And I haven't done for over 12 years. We drive everything via automation and via an end-to-end management stack. And some of the stuff we'll talk about later in the session is really understanding how we can empower the enterprise to start using some of these methodologies. You know, so I'll let you now move on and start addressing some of these areas.
All right, perfect. So a lot of what Phil covered, a lot of what Microsoft has already learned in managing our own data centers and providing services to our end users, we are taking those learnings and we're driving them into our product sets. And we'll talk about how we're doing that in a second. I want to really quickly just shift gears and do a bit of level setting. The number one question that I get asked by customers around cloud is, Jamal, what is Microsoft's definition of cloud? Okay. I quickly respond and I let them know Microsoft does not have a definition of cloud. Instead, we leverage the NIST definition of cloud, right? The National Institute of Standards and Technology. And NIST states every cloud solution, whether public, private, or hybrid, must contain these five essential attributes. They are broad network access, resource pooling, elasticity, chargeback, and self-service. Okay? Microsoft throws in two more for a private cloud, and that is customization and control. I want you to keep that in the back of your minds as we progress forward in this presentation. Another commonality that I see and a trend that comes up over and over and over again as we talk to a very large organization is actually twofold. Number one, business users tell us I can get IT services or capabilities faster, better, cheaper if I actually work around my own IT department. The second thing that we hear from application developers is, you know what, my IT department, they slow me down. So I want to ask, is this something that you're hearing a lot of in your own environments? Yeah, there's a lot of nodding heads out there. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is? I mean, we've been doing IT for how long? Some people in here, 10, 15, what, 20 years? Why is this becoming such an issue today? I'll tell you why. Because of Phil. Well, not just Phil. Because of Microsoft.
That's fine.
Because of Amazon. Because of Salesforce.com. Because of large service providers. I'm not going to beat around the bush, and I'll tell you exactly how it is. The reason why we're hearing this today more and more as local IT organization is because large service providers are romancing your business owners. Phil rolls up in a nice suit. He cleans up nice, by the way. He'll take a business owner out to lunch. And you know what he's going to provide him or her? A nice little service catalog that's going to have exactly what they want to consume as a business. And it's going to have an SLA. It's going to have a very attractive price. And he's going to provide it at a service availability that he can guarantee and back up.
And let's think about that for a second, because I'm not going into these organizations and saying, I can give you Exchange or SharePoint or Link. I'm going and saying, I can give your users working email accounts. I can give your users working SharePoint. I can give your users, yes, a working iPad. Yes, that's a very, very, very compelling conversation that I have with the business owners and decision makers in these businesses. Yes. And that's the power and the drive that the service providers are encroaching on the enterprise space today.
So before you get your pitchforks out and look for Phil after the session and try to take him out, okay, let me also provide this context. There is no reason why an IT organization should feel threatened by large service providers, and I'll give you two reasons why. Number one, because of customization, and number two, because of control. Service providers' business is based off of creating capabilities that are generic, that miss or that hit 80% of what the mass market needs. So they can do what? They can scale, and they can achieve economies of scale. That is an advantage local IT departments have over service providers, number one. The second is very obvious, control. Data sovereignty. No matter what organization, what industry vertical you're in, there is going to be some need, some requirement, some want, whether based on federal regulation or just paranoia. I want to know where my data is. Okay? So those are two reasons why IT organizations are, you're secure. You have nothing to worry about. But I will tell you this. If IT departments want to stay relevant to the business and increase the strategic relationship with the business, there is one very fundamental thing that needs to happen. And that is, IT departments need to evolve from service managers to service providers themselves. Okay? The way Microsoft sees this evolution happening with IT departments so that they can provide these levels of services that our users are asking about means that there has to be a fundamental shift in the way IT departments think about delivering services to their business, to their businesses, okay? And Microsoft does this by defining two personas, and I'm going to introduce these personas now. First one is a service consumer. We all know what a service consumer is, okay? A service consumer cares about what? They want their services in a simple way. They want it when they want it. They want to be able to deploy services in the fashion and when they require them, okay? But above all, they want it to be simple. Has anyone tried to explain to a HR manager that they can't provision new users because their SAN infrastructure is running out of space? Has anyone had that conversation before? What do you get from the HR manager? Blank stares, deer in the headlights. They don't care. All they want to know is, why can't I onboard this new user that's coming onto our organization? That's all they care about. So abstract the complexity, abstract, and only talk in the terms of what's important to them, the service that they're consuming. Okay? Now, there's another persona that we want to talk about, and that is the service consumer, but let's also call them the data center admin. And Phil, the service provider, and let's call them a data center admin. So Phil, what does the data center admin care about?
Okay, so we're now talking about the stuff that we always talk about. We're talking about this storage fabric, this network fabric, this compute fabric. But then we're wrapping that up in some form of delivery framework and the ability to drive services out to the user. Right? But then on top of that, we're then actually talking now about a delivery framework where the user can self-provision and self-manage and a chargeback and a billing framework. So that we can keep track of what the users are doing, what they're consuming, and actually have cost centers within our business. You know, and what we're now talking about is that we have this area that used to be the provision of the service provider now is evolving into the enterprise space, because the enterprise space should now be thinking and operating like a service provider. Yes, delivering services for your user base in a way that is consumption-based with SLAs and deliverables.
Okay. So one of the things we want to round out the needs or what a service provider or a data center admin really cares about is, hey, look, I want to give my users access to the environment, but I'm not going to give them the keys to the kingdom, right? You want to do it in a construct that allows you to delegate and give access based on what the needs are. Because if you don't, what happens? Things will run amok, right? All right. So the way Microsoft sees these worlds coming together is in three domains. Those three domains include infrastructure management, service delivery and automation, and application management. Okay? The areas that we're going to focus in on is actually between infrastructure management and service delivery and automation on the right side. Okay? Now, the reason being is because that's where the rubber meets the road. That is where we define our relationship with the service consumers, what it is that they want to consume, how it's going to be deployed, and ultimately who's responsible for those deployed services. Now, I want to take a second and just ask a very quick question. Okay? How many people here in their IT careers can think back to when there were dedicated TCP/IP teams, or dedicated DHCP teams, or DNS teams? Remember WINS? Who managed WINS? Oh, that's a good remember. Over time, you throw in identity, what happened to all those teams? They converged, right? And now you have the platform team. You have the Active Directory team, right? What once used to be core functions became context, converged, and provide higher level services back to the business. That exact same thing is happening today in the data center. What I mean by that is, today you probably have a networking team, a dedicated storage team, a server team, a virtualization team. It's not uncommon, but I'll tell you right now, that model does not work in the service provider world. It does not work. Okay? Instead, what we suggest is to create what's called a data center team or a system center team. What I mean by that is you have a pool of resources that what we say is there's a T-shirt model. You have a resource that is proficient and understands at a 200 level broad capabilities, right, across domains, understands networking, understands the tooling that goes into monitoring, orchestration, service delivery, and automation. And maybe in that team, that single person has deep product expertise in storage or networking or what have you. That is a model that does scale. But the reason why that model needs to exist is because ultimately we're doing what?
So let's run this back to the real world. So us, as a service provider, and we have been doing this now for over 14 years, I don't have dedicated teams in individual areas. I have, we'll call them an ops team for now, but they're not really ops, but I have a core engineering team who all they do is they live out of our management platform. That's all they do. And they understand how our management platform drives our underlying fabric and our end-to-end solution. Right? That fabric has been built using automation by our engineering team. But those people never go near the underlying systems. What they do is they understand how to keep things going and to implement and to work with things. Yes. The key advantage for us is that it means that I don't have to bring on people in a linear manner as I scale resource. Yes. When I bring on new data centers, when I bring on new compute or resource functionality, as I bring on new user base, I don't have to scale people in a linear manner. I have exactly the same number of people I have today as I had when I only had two data centers. Right? I now have data centers in multiple locations. That is the key advantage of this broad sense of approach with a limited number of people having deep dive with automation and end-to-end management stack.
Okay. Yeah. Microsoft realized this very early. In the same way that Phil's talking about, when we were running our own data centers, we took that siloed approach. And you know what? services were not delivered in a reliable way. You know why? Because a service is comprised of multiple components. A little bit of networking, a little bit of storage. And if there's an issue, if your team can't go across the stack to troubleshoot, maintain, or manage that service, guess what you're going to have? You're going to have outages. You're going to have issues. You're going to have a lot of wasted resources. Okay? We consciously made that decision to drive this organizational change into our products as well. In 2007, System Center Suite was born. And you had a bulk of products that are now under an umbrella or a suite. And we worked really hard to do what we can to integrate those components together so that you could do what? Enable a data center admin team or a System Center team, for example. Okay? So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to really just quickly walk through in an ideal scenario, what it actually means to request a service from a service consumer and then provision that into an environment. So over here, we've got a persona of a service consumer. And the service consumer wants to do what? Go to a service catalog. We talked about that. Pick and choose the services that they require and put that into some type of CMDB, right? The CMDB accepts that change request, creates a CR, right? And based on the parameters of that request, deploys that resource over a number of mediums, whether it's a public cloud, a private cloud, a physical environment, or a virtual environment. I'll stop here and I'll really press hard and drive this one very simple message home. When you work as a service provider, what makes or breaks the system is your fabric management environment. It's the set of tools you use to govern, provision, manage the services that you're providing to your customers. Okay?
And actually, let's expand on that key point, because it's not only the fabric management, but that fabric management needs to be completely transparent to the end user base and those end services. And it must be transparent across multiple fabric types, be it on-prem, be it off-prem, be it cloud, be it geolocation agnostic. The absolutely key thing for service provider and now for the enterprise is that you are abstracting between where you're physically doing stuff, through your fabric layer and out to the application layer. And it must be transparent and unified. Because if it wasn't unified, I couldn't scale. And I couldn't provide the SLAs, because if I'm not unified, I've got inconsistency, I have to do things by hand, and if I do things by hand, I get SLA issues. Right? And then I lose money.
Yeah. 6 years ago, if you told me, Jamal, you're working for Microsoft one day, I would have started laughing. Because Microsoft wasn't in my world, to be honest with you. Right? We worked and we built data centers that were large and complex and had heterogeneous systems. And honestly, Microsoft just wasn't there, right? But I'll tell you what. A lot has changed in the focus about how Microsoft thinks about managing an enterprise. And one of the most important fundamental shifts was embracing heterogeneous environments. Not only managing non-Microsoft products, but also multiple mediums. That is so key. I can't stress that enough. And today, I would challenge anybody, I would go toe-to-toe and argue that today System Center is the one suite in the industry that is as heterogeneous, capable, and able to manage across all these mediums. There isn't anything that comes close. I will go toe-to-toe. I know every stack, IBM, VMware, HP, you let me know. Because VMware, what do they care about? Virtualization. That's fine. That's cool. HP, what do they care about? Managing the HP stack. IBM, same deal. Very proprietary. They actually focus on just their stack. If you're building a fabric management environment, you have to go across mediums. No one's completely virtualized. No one's completely physical. No one is going to be completely public cloud. No one's going to be completely private cloud. Okay? Another thing I want to point out, too, when we talk about provisioning resources, we're not just talking about virtual machines. I can't tell you how many different customers we've talked about and said, if I hear about private cloud and infrastructure as a service or providing virtual machines, I'm going to blow my brains out. Right? The truth is, when you talk about provisioning resources, it could be anything. It could be a mailbox. It could be a user account. It could be a piece of software. It does not matter. It does not matter. It could be a physical server for that matter. It does not matter. But once those resources are provisioned, the fabric management environment has to be also what? To be able to monitor those resources across those mediums as well. Okay? So what we're going to do now is we're going to just take a step down and talk through two areas that we think would be very relevant to those in this room. And that is the areas of infrastructure management and service delivery and automation. Okay? So around infrastructure management and service delivery and automation, we wanted to uncover what it actually means to provision resources, to manage resources, to create a construct to provide service delivery to your end users. How do you create a service catalog? What is a service description? Okay? What does orchestration and automation have to do with all this stuff? Right? Because theory is great, but until you apply it to something real, it's just it's hot air. Right? So the first area, I wanted to quickly run through this, okay, is when you're provisioning your infrastructure. Again, we want to be able to deploy physical systems, virtual systems, whether it be on Hyper-V, Citrix, or VMware. Oops. And the thing that I really want to point out here is as you provision infrastructure, and we know that many organizations are vested in VMware. And that's great. That's your hypervisor. Go with it. Awesome. Happy. That's great. No one is saying rip and replace. But make sure, again, the fabric management environment has the ability to manage that, plus additional mediums. Okay. The notion around software defined data centers, I think this is not funny, but one thing I think is interesting is that it's not a new concept. Phil was giving me an earful. And trust me, when he's, you know, he loved to share his experience of certain things. And he said, Jamal, I've been doing this for how long, Phil?
14 years plus.
14 years. Yeah. It's a way of thinking about your resources, right? I'm not going to treat my resources as individual components. Here's my storage environment, my networking environment. You think of resources as scale units, as one compute, storage, networking stack that you can provision to, right? This is nothing new, okay? So having the ability to create these pool resources that spans networking, storage, servers, compute is incredibly important.
And critically allows this stuff to scale in isolation based on user demand. That's the really key point to bring up.
Okay. One thing, and we're not gonna cover it too much here, there is a whole methodology in terms of how to think about scale units or growing through scale units. And I can't stress enough how important it is actually to define what a scale unit is for your environment. A scale unit could be a rack of servers, fully configured. It could be half a rack. It could be a cluster. It does not matter. What matters is you figure out what your capacity needs are. It all boils down to capacity and demand management. If your organization is growing at 30% year over year, your skill units are going to look pretty big. But if they're not, they're going to look smaller. Why? Because as you grow your environment out, you're growing at these specific skill units. You're adding these skill units in terms of capacity into your environment. Not really going to go into it right now. Another topic for another day. Okay? Now, this is my favorite part of the session, hands down. Hands down. If you think I was excited before, wait till you see me on this. Right? This is by far the most important piece of the entire session. Okay? How do you enable service delivery and automation in an environment? Taking the learnings that Microsoft has had, that service providers have had, and packaging it up in a simple way. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk through what, let's use a scenario. In fact, we'll make this a little interactive. Okay? Somebody call out, what is the number one top asked request?
From your user base. Yeah, your top user base asked.
If you were to go on your ticketing system and you said, and you ranked, what is it?
Reset password.
Reset a password?
Good.
Let me get another one.
Number two. Pardon?
More storage, okay.
From the user? Is that question coming in from the user or from your tech teams? That no more storage would be kind of number two with it from your, okay, from your system. Anything else?
Access requests to systems, to resources. Okay, all right.
Pardon?
Oh, access to distribution list, perfect. No, this is great,
that's,
awesome
that's,
stuff.
Yeah, that's a great one, actually. DLs are a big issue.
Let's combine some of those, okay? And let's take user provisioning, okay? User onboarding.
So let's talk about that. So who here provisions users?
HR does.
Okay,
right?
So okay, good. Okay, fine. So let's talk about the technical activity of provisioning a user for a second. So I've got a new staff in the organization. So to provision a user, I've got to do the following things. I've got to create an object in Active Directory. I've got to create them a file store. I've got to create them an Exchange account. I've got to set up distribution lists and aliases. I've got to give them access to SharePoint. I've got to set them up inside of Link. I've probably got to allocate them some applications with something like AppV. Right? I've got to set up user environment virtualization. Right? That's just some of them. I've whittled off probably 8 or 9 already.
Activities
right?
within.
So far alone. I've also got to deal with a physical machine or a BYOD device situation. Because otherwise, if they haven't got something to connect from, they can't work. Oh, and by the way, I've also got to get information to them to actually get them working with their login details. So I've got to communicate with them. Right. So what's interesting is I've probably got 14 or 15 steps already. Now, as a service provider, I had a whole engineering team who wrote a great big management platform, right, to go figure out all this automation and talk to all the other subsystems and go and make it work. Right. Well, what a lot of enterprises are doing today is you have a bunch of engineers who have runbooks. I do this, then I do the other, and when I phone up somebody else, they're nodding heads, it sounds familiar. Yeah, you've got lots of engineers doing this, yes. And they probably get it right 90% of the time, right? But 10% of the time, they forget something, or something goes wrong, yes? And then it doesn't get done correctly, or we get problems. Nodding heads here? Yes, I see some nodding heads. Okay. So these are some of the really big challenges of doing something as simple as creating a user. So how can we make this easier and better to deliver predictable service delivery in the enterprise space?
So one of the most exciting things, and I literally have to hold on to something because I talk about this, I relive the pain that I went through in managing some of the data centers, right, is the ability to create a service catalog, something simple like service catalog, right? Today, inside a system center, inside a service manager, you have the ability to create a request offering. Literally right-click on that request offering and publish it to the service manager self-service portal, essentially populating your service catalog, okay? That one little activity took, I think, a team of 5 people for me to update and maintain. And I think you've got how many?
We have 8 engineers who permanently build engineering stuff.
So let's think about that. I have a service catalog, and I want to update and maintain requests that I want to be able to make available to my end users, whether it's HR, whether it's business, it does not matter, okay? So having the ability to create, design a service through processes, right-click on it, publish it to the portal, and say this is now a request offering, when a user hits the portal, they are able to submit the request. Let's say it's creating a user or onboarding a user. Let's say it's HR that's doing it. Instead of them calling you, they go to the self-service portal. They get, because it's a standard change request, a ticket number. Now, before I go further, who wants to be brave here and say, tell me the difference between a standard change request and a non-standard change request? What's the biggest difference? What is it?
Repeatability.
You have a known outcome. Standard change request means you have a known outcome, and therefore, you can do what? You can automate them. So if you have a standard change request, let's say the user account creation, you have automatic approval set into place, service manager allows and gives you the ability to design this process with gates, governance, and control. Let's say everything's auto-approved. And based on what the activities are for creating onboarding a user, whether it's creating an account in Active Directory, provisioning a mailbox, whether on-premise or Office 365, sending a provisioning request to HR for their laptop, it does not matter. You can take those processes and drive them through runbooks within Orchestrator. How many people know what Orchestrator is? Okay, that's a good show of hands. For those that don't know about Orchestrator, Orchestrator is, at the time, was the leading non-Microsoft data center automation tool. We purchased it in 2007, okay? And our promise was when we purchased this tool that every non-Microsoft integration pack we would carry over to 2012. So what this allows us to do is integrate Service Manager and Orchestrator, the runbooks and Orchestrator, and as you pass through certain gates in the process, it can call out specific runbooks and do what? Carry out those activities in repeatable, predictable fashion, driving out human involvement, and therefore possibly human error. Okay. Another very, very cool tidbit, and this is not really advertised, but to me it mattered a lot, is you can delegate rights to the runbook application. So what I mean by that is a user coming on board, let's say they need enterprise admin account rights. Before, you probably have to do it because you're an enterprise admin and you're the only person that can create rights, create that user account. But now you can delegate those rights to Orchestrator, publish the service request to HR or to the self-service portal. When HR wants to put in the request to create this new service, this enterprise admin account, you can get an email saying, hey, there's a request for an enterprise admin account. Do you approve or disapprove? You hit approve, it goes back into the process and it approves the entire process. And then Orchestrator will go on your behalf and create that user account for you. Okay? Now this shows, I think, a VM being provisioned, but just for one second, just think about how many different applications this can have for your environment. Every mundane, repeatable activity that you get bogged down with on a day-to-day basis, if you could drive into a service catalog that you can then point users to, whether internal app, business users, to do on their own, think about how much that frees you up to do activities that actually provide real value into the business. Like, I don't know, let's say architecting a new product or solution. Or let's make our processes or our methods more efficient, or re-engineer the way we actually accept calls. There's a million activities you can do that now that you're freed up to actually provide that value because you've driven out those repeatable, mundane tasks.
And you've driven out failure and error, which is your really, because we covered this before, the difference between a known and an unknown outcome request. What you're doing through this automation now is you're mitigating a very large majority of those unknown failure type outcomes. It means you're freeing up your time and you're being able to concentrate on the business development. What's most interesting, though, about what Microsoft has done with System Center and with System 2012 and SP1 is, you know, my engineering team built this kind of platform. We had to build it because we were a service provider, because this stuff didn't exist when we started doing it. And we maintain it and we build it and develop it. But you guys don't want a great big development engineering resource. And what's wonderful about where System Center is today is that you can take the components of System Center and you can drive that end-to-end automation stack, that self-provisioning inside the user, you know, the knowledge worker being able to create their own user account, right the way through to the back-end fabric management and everything in between, including billing. Right? And you can take that out the box with System Center, which is a huge benefit for the enterprise, because effectively what Microsoft is allowing you to do is think and function in the way that I think as a service provider, but do it as an enterprise and do it as a turnkey solution with their own products.
And then one thing to kind of note out, this slide actually talks to provisioning a virtual machine. And I think if you look closer, if you look at the slides later, it'll say provisioning a virtual machine in a VMware environment. The point of this is, it's a resource. It's just a resource. That's all that matters. And it should be applied to not just your physical environment or your virtualization environment. There should be many applications, regardless of what the medium that you're actually trying to drive the automation or orchestration into. But above all, it's an instant service catalog. Within itself, in an organization that practices ITIL or ETOM, any type of framework around operational maturity, you will see that the most important gate is to create a service catalog with a service description and be able to negotiate your SLAs. Okay? This gets you there. This gets you there, okay? All right, and this last piece that I wanted to show is as you create your service request and you're actually designing your service, how many organizations today have either playbooks or standard operating procedures are pretty documented in terms of how they carry out certain activities in their environment? Okay, that's a good show of hands, yeah. You guys are halfway there already. If you've done some documentation, if you put some rigor and repeatability into your processes, You can take those steps, those playbooks, and drive them into processes within Service Manager. Incredibly, incredibly powerful. Incredibly powerful. And if you haven't been there, well, it gives you a platform to at least start with and start thinking about, okay, well, let's just maybe walk through what all the steps are to do certain activities. Okay? All right. Last piece around operating the infrastructure. So we've deployed these resources, and it lives on a physical server, both on Windows, non-Windows environments. We have to manage our networking devices because the services we provision leverage networking, virtual machines, and multiple hypervisors, right? So again, the fabric management environment has to have the capability to manage across all these mediums, both provisioning and for monitoring, right? So how many people here are familiar with Operations Manager? That's a good number. One of the most important things about Operations Manager that happened actually in 2008, I think, was its segue into monitoring not servers, like devices, actual networking devices. That has come a long way in 2012. And what that basically means is you have, through one tool, the ability to manage and monitor, more importantly, storage devices, networking devices, physical servers, virtual servers. And here's the thing that I feel really strong about, I don't think we talk about enough: the ability to monitor resources provisioned to Azure. How many people know that Ops Manager has an Azure Management Pack? Yeah, I can't believe it. Like, there's literally three people raised their hands. This is by far one of the things that excites me so much, and I don't know why we don't talk about it enough. There is a management pack for Azure. If you deploy resources, either in platform as a service or infrastructure as a service, you can enter the subscription information into Ops Manager, and it will monitor it for you. Nobody does that. Nobody does that. And we don't talk about that enough. But that is a powerful capability. Because if you do deploy a solution into Azure, probably it's in what we term a hybrid cloud scenario. You're not going to go all public cloud. You're not going to go all infrastructure as a service. It's going to be a mix. So having a single tool that's to be able to bridge those gaps is incredibly powerful. Okay. This slide just talks to, again, the dedication, but the commitment around being able to manage heterogeneous environments. So again, today, Ops Manager, the ability to manage Linux devices, Windows servers, network devices, storage, .NET, you name it. The list goes on and on. Okay, here's a screenshot of basically the networking management pack being discovering or pointing at a specific networking device and it being able to discover other network devices around it. Okay? All right. So now, we're actually doing pretty good on time here.
Good.
I want to leave you with this, and I think Phil's going to bring us home, okay?
Okay.
So, if you take anything away from what we covered and what we talked about, right, is that the role that you're doing today will not be the role that you'll be doing tomorrow. It will not be the role that you're doing tomorrow. Therefore, we suggest, if you can, during Tech Ed, for the remaining Tech Ed, what we did was we pulled out some keywords in sessions that's happening for the rest of the Tech Ed. And if there's anything that you're unfamiliar with or you're curious about, we highly, highly urge that you go check them out, right? It doesn't hurt. Broaden your knowledge. Broaden your exposure to these other areas. If you're a networking guy that's been your soul, your bread and butter, check out the orchestrator sessions. Vice versa. If all you do is virtualization, check out something in the Intune space or BYOD, right? Broaden your knowledge. It's only going to help you going forward. Okay? I think Phil wants to.
Yeah. So let's just talk about those concepts for a second, because you know I've spoken about being a service provider for a lot of this session, and I think what the enterprise space has to realize, what we've been talking about today, is there is an evolution you have to go through to think the same way I do. But the really key thing that I did with all my staff many, over a decade ago, is I literally don't have anybody who is a storage specialist or a networking guy. Right? And more importantly, I don't have people who consider themselves to be data center people. My people all think in terms of solution. We've spoken a lot about this today. But that includes the end user device. That includes the end user app. That includes the transit fabric in between. Right? You know, all of our staff understand these concepts in a way that they can speak and build systems as an overall architecture design, as an end-to-end stack, because ultimately it's about service delivery. It isn't about compute. It isn't about IOPS a second over the network. It is about my user in my office being able to print, my user out in the field being able to use their Android device to go and get their email. It is about my user who has just landed in Australia and you weren't expecting them to actually be able to get hold of your services from a cyber cafe that they weren't expecting to do, and for it to work, and for it to work at 4 o'clock in the morning because you don't have to get out of bed. Right? That is end-to-end solution delivery. And what's really interesting about this is, you know, we do this as service providers today, and actually the enterprise, this is where you guys can evolve to and drive the value, because this was one of the concepts we touched at the beginning of the session. We were talking about the service provider can't provide that unique business benefit, that understanding of exactly what your business does. I call it the plugin analogy. I can give you a working copy of Outlook, but I can't give you the Salesforce.com plugin to make it work well with it, to give your end-to-end business solution. And what you can do as an enterprise is really take this end-to-end learning, these multiple technologies, and view it as an end-to-end configuration to drive value and benefit to your business. So ultimately, derive service delivery, high availability of SLA, and reduced operational cost. In other words, think like a service provider.
All right, so you know what we're going to do is we're probably going to stop right here. We're going to also stay after if you guys have any questions. I have just two last requests. Number one, please, please, please fill out your evals for this session. It's like crack for presenters. Okay? Yeah. After this session, we're going to be hitting refresh like a mouse trying to get. Whatever it's its reward is, we need that information to take back to our leadership so that we can continue to deliver sessions like this to you. And the second request is when you actually do fill out your evals, either give us a 5 or give us a 1.
Yeah.
Because frankly, nobody reads anything in between. Okay.
So. Or you can sharpen your pitchforks on the way out. Like, yeah. It's fine. You can be waiting there to stab me. It's fine.
So thank you again. Please enjoy the rest of Tech Ed. You guys have been fantastic. Have a great week, guys.
Thanks, guys.